This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is going on, Real Talk fam? Welcome back to a brand new podcast episode. First episode of the year 2020. Hope everyone had a great New Year's yesterday. Man, 2019 flew by. I don't know if it was the same for you guys, but that year just flew by so quick. I can't believe this is our third year on the podcast. We've only been doing it for a little over a year, but we've had episodes in 2018, 2019, and now 2020, and we're super excited for what this year holds. I was just talking to Christian, who's obviously off from school, in between semesters right now for our college. We're still sophomores, so we're still going through that journey of school and all the semesters and all the classes just to graduate and get that degree. But I was just talking to him about a lot of our goals for the year and what we want to accomplish. And we've been pretty stagnant with the podcast. Just to be pretty upfront, you know, we've put out episodes every week. Every single week there's been a new episode, and it's been fun, but we have to continue to level up because there's so many people out there that really need to hear our message and that could really benefit and gain value from what we have to offer, whether it be through our interviews or just the content that we're putting out there. And obviously the stories and the things that our guests can share, they're life-changing, and we've seen it firsthand. So we have a lot of big goals for 2020. We have a lot of big plans, and it's a lot outside of just the podcast. And I could tell you one big plan we have going into 2020 is to start a Real Talk University blog platform. Currently, we're building that platform, but what we're focused on right now is to find contributors, people who will write for this platform, and the requirement is that you're in college. Yep. So if you're not in college, you can't be a contributor for this platform, but you know, there's going to be value on all sides of the equation here. We just want to hear from college students to see, you know, what Real Talk means to them, for them to share their problems, what they're going through, their opinions, what's important to them, their passions, their stories, whatever it may be with the world. And then for us, Christian and I, and Real Talk University as a community, to connect those people with the people we've interviewed, the likes of these successful entrepreneurs and success stories, so that they can benefit from that and maybe find their way through problems in their journeys and wherever they may be in life, and just kind of create this big community of two sides, people that are in college and people that are not in college but have found success or that are also on that journey, just to connect the two, because I think there could be a lot of amazing things that happen as a result of those guys being connected and being put in the same community. But regardless, I'm excited for this blog platform. If you are a college student, please, please, please reach out to us. We are looking for contributors before the platform even launches, so that when it launches, we're ready to go. I'm telling you, it's going to be a huge opportunity if you're a college student that wants your voice to be shared, or just an opportunity to connect with like-minded individuals, especially getting in on it early. I think it's going to be a huge platform because I think we could help a lot of people, and I know we're going to be talking about and focusing on very important topics. So again, if you're a talented writer, an aspiring writer, or just an entrepreneur or a college student that just wants to do more with your life, reach out to us. We'd love to have you as a contributor for our blog. But let's get back to today's episode. This, again, our first interview episode of 2020. So we did a little bit of digging through what we had, and I think this is our best one. This is our best one to start off the new year with. This is a close friend of mine, Jordan Gross. We've been connected for probably not even a year, but he's just done so much for me in my journey and has had such an impact and has been such a benefit to have in my network. I can't even begin to tell you. And as soon as you guys listen to this episode and hear what he has to say, I'm sure you'll probably be connecting with him, whether it be on LinkedIn or Instagram or wherever else. And you too will also see the impact he'll have on your life. He's just one of those guys that really will go out of his way to help other people like him, like us, like entrepreneurs and like-minded and motivated individuals, without anything in return, without wanting anything in return. It's amazing. He's just the man. So, Jordan, just a little background on him, is an executive coach at Cloud Nine Living. He's a two-time author, about to be three-time author. This is what this whole podcast is about, his third book that's coming out later this year. Three-time founder. He's a TEDx speaker. He's done it all, and he's one of those guys that's still pretty young. Just got out of college, and he's just pursuing his passion, and his Cloud Nine life is what he likes to call it. So I really encourage you guys to listen through to the entirety of this episode. Jordan just has so much to share, and so much empowering things, tips, advice, strategies, tactics, everything you guys need to hear is in this episode. And Jordan really just lays it out in a humbling way. So there's a lot to gain. So definitely be sure to tune in this episode. Again, there's a lot that's on the plate for 2020. I'm sure you guys have a lot of your own personal goals and ambitions. And if we can help in any way, please don't hesitate to reach out. But we're excited, guys. We're really excited to see where this year takes us. I know there's a lot to accomplish, a lot of opportunity out there, like we always talk about. But it all starts with making a commitment and staying consistent with whatever it may be. So if you're here listening to this podcast, you're committed to getting better, learning more, connecting with more like-minded individuals, and you're already starting the year on a winning streak. So enjoy the episode, guys.
What's up, Christian? Good to meet you, man.
What's up, man? Nice to finally see you. Not just a profile picture, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Good to see you. How you guys doing today?
Good.
We're good, man. We just hopped off an interview an hour ago, grabbed some lunch, and getting to it, bro. I'm excited for this. It's been a long time coming. And
I know. I can't wait.
Got a lot to talk about, so
yeah.
It's best to just hop right into it, cause
I
have a lot of questions outside of what you sent me to.
Yeah. I'll let you guys take the lead. I'm super pumped, guys. I can't wait.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you coming on. So we'll get right started. And for us, our video quality is not gonna be great, but we'll send you the links to everything so that you could use it yourself. Probably don't want to see us anyways when you promote your book. So if there's any good clips or anything,
or of course I do.
Any special requests after, just let us know and we'll make sure to get some content to you.
Okay. All right. Sounds perfect.
And when did you say you wanted this to be like actually released?
Early February. So I'm going to have by then, or by tomorrow, I think actually, I'm going to have a pre-order page that's ready to go. And I've been giving away the free chapters already. So I'll just tell you guys that I have that to give away.
Perfect.
For your listeners. Yeah.
Perfect. And when's the expected launch, I guess?
February 9th, but I think that's a Sunday. So probably February 10th or maybe February 9th. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, cool. I have a lot more questions. So we'll just put in the podcast. All right,
man. Yeah.
What's up, guys? This is Real Talk University, the podcast. We have Jordan Gross on the podcast here. And Jordan, just a background of what Christian and I do with the podcast is we interview entrepreneurs, authors, any successful person, I guess you could say, that has a story to share, something that they're working on that's really exciting and could benefit our audience or anything else. And I think you fall in both those categories and more. So if you could just introduce yourself to our audience, let them know who you are, and what you're all about.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you, boys. And this has been a long time coming, like we said before. And Christian, it's good to see your face. Andre, it's good to see you again. So thank you for having me on. This is going to be super fun. And I appreciate the kind words that I fit into that group. I've listened to many an episode of your podcast, so I'm just ready to hit the ground running. So a little bit about me. I was a pretty by-the-book guy. I went to Northwestern. I studied economics. I had internships in finance and consulting. But something switched around my junior year when I got back from studying abroad. And I'll be honest with you guys, like I was a little bit of a partier when I was abroad. And I wasn't really, you know, doing much schoolwork. I wasn't focused on my career. I wasn't focused on anything except like doing work and just kind of, not really focusing on what I wanted to do with my life, right? I was being geared toward this type of life by my fraternity brothers, my, you know, soccer friends. I played soccer in college. My brother and his friends and what society expected a kid like me to do. When I got back from abroad, though, I kind of said, okay, how do I be a normal person again? How do I make an impact on this world much greater than myself. So the first thing I did was I started this Alzheimer's awareness organization. And that was my first entry into the world of entrepreneurship, into the world of creating something from nothing, into the world of using my relationships and interpersonal skills to see something grow, right? So from that experience, I started to learn about leadership. And from leadership, I started to read books about personal development and self-care. And I started to listen to podcasts, right? And I just got so immersed in this world that I wanted to follow my passions, right? So I started a startup company. And then I went into the restaurant world in this big fancy job where I was in this management program for a big time restaurant group. And I thought that was this cool thing where I was following my passions. And then all of a sudden, 3 months in, I was shot. I was absolutely toasted by the amount of, you know, physical labor that it was, honestly, being on my feet all day, and also the emotional turmoil of being in that type of environment. And it was very steadfast. It was very robotic. And it was the opposite of all the experiences I enjoyed as a startup founder, as, you know, somebody who immersed myself in personal development. So I ended up quitting that job. 4 months in, November 2017, I kind of said, all right, what the heck am I going to do now? And I realized that with all the stuff that I was listening to, all the stuff that I was reading, I had a ton of my own content in a Word doc, like around 100 pages or something. And it was basically how I remained positive, optimistic, and content in a job that was pretty rigorous, right? Other people were going home crying some nights, and I would come in smiling. So what I did was I turned that into a book. My first book was called Getting Comfy, Your Morning Guide to Daily Happiness. And I wouldn't recommend this for any listeners out there, but I had absolutely no plan whatsoever. My plan was to put this book out there and see what happened. But as I started to get some responses to the book, some good feedback, I said, okay, let me make a plan. So that's how some of the coaching opportunities came up. That's how some of my, you know, my TED talk came to fruition. That's how going on podcasts came to be. And little by little, I realized that there's a world where I can just help people and do that for a career. And that's my true calling. So after that first book, which did super well, I kind of said, okay, how do I be different in this world of personal development? And this is where we're at now. I have a new book coming out called The Journey to Cloud Nine. I have a new philosophy all about living life on Cloud Nine. And it's using fiction to promote personal development. So how these stories shape our lives, and how rather than being told what to do in traditional self-help, I believe that using fiction for personal development is a way to interpret and analyze and assess for yourself how you can best go about living your own life. So that's where we're at now. Got the book coming out. Still do coaching. I do a little bit of speaking. I'm sort of putting that on the back burner, doing a lot of podcasting and just, you know, marketing the heck out of this book before it comes out. So thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to market on this platform.
100%. I just want to go back into the first book really quick, because you said like you would show up to this crazy job and just be smiling and optimistic. Like, how are you able to actually do that? Could you just give like a brief summary of the
book? So Getting Comfy was not just getting comfy with your situation, getting comfy with the uncomfy, right? But COMFY is actually an acronym. And if you guys want to just real quick do a little bit of a routine, we can go through my morning routine as to how I was smiling when I first got to work. So you guys ready? All right. So let's just take a huge deep breath, right? Like in through the nose and out through the mouth. So we just did C. Like, it's that simple. You can wake up and do a deep breath, and the C part of the morning routine stands for calm. And I started to think about this when I was writing that first book, whereas like I wasn't a big self-help guy myself. I didn't like people telling me exactly what to do. I wanted to get some advice and then implement it into my own life and see what works, see what didn't work. So all of these COMFYs are categories. They're not demands or specific requests, right? So calm could be deep breathing, but it could also be meditation. It could also be going for a walk. It could be doing yoga, right? So just keep that in mind as you go through the rest of the routine. So now we have O, and I love that it's two of you guys here. So I just want you both to just look at each other and just tell one another something that you're proud of the other person.
You're a great guy.
proud of your podcast.
Nice. So O is, it could be fun like that. O could be reaching out to, you know, somebody who you don't think you have any business talking to. O could be writing in a journal. And O stands for openness, right? It's about being vulnerable. So that's what O is all about. That's the second thing. So next we have M. So I won't make you guys do it, but if we had more time, I'd make you guys do like a quick high-intensity interval training workout. Because M stands for movement, right? So many benefits to exercise, but it's the key to really turning on my brain and my body, and that's what gets me smiling in the morning. F is another biggie. It's a different one than I think many people hear in traditional morning routine books or things like that. F stands for funny. So I truly believe that the way that we can approach life with all the serious things that go on, if we focus on smiling, we focus on making ourselves laugh, making other people laugh, right? It's a way where we don't have to take ourselves too seriously. So that's F. Finally, we've got Y, and Y stands for you or your passion or your choice. And it's really the entire theme of having a morning routine. It's to do something that you want to do rather than have to do. So when I was going to that job, I was, you know, I was reading, I was writing, I was playing a sport in the morning, right? Doing something for me so that I could just show up to work where I had to be, already having done all these things that I wanted to do. So that's it. That's the comfy.
That's sweet. And clearly it worked out for you. So obviously we're going to see how that goes. I'm down to try it out.
It's a good one. You know, you've got the Miracle Morning, you've got 5 a.m. Club. This was just my own personal spin, and that's what I want you to do too. You don't have to have comfy, but try a couple of them out and make your own.
That's sweet, man. I will definitely go about doing that. So I just want to, with your current book, you said take fiction. What exactly did you mean by that? Like create like your own kind of story or?
Yeah.
I'm kind of confused on that, if you could elaborate.
Yeah. So you're going to get even more confused now, but the way that I created my book was through a concept I came up with called imagitivitation, right? So imagitivitation is a combination of imagination, creativity, interpretation, and implementation. So I'll go through each one. So when I was doing my background, Cloud Nine is all about this feeling of euphoria. There are moments that you feel like you're on cloud nine. There are days you feel like you're on cloud nine, weeks, months, years. And my goal is for people to live cloud nine lives, these lives that they're truly meant to live according to their own terms as opposed to anybody else. So in studying cloud nine, I've interviewed hundreds of people and I really took like a traditional nonfiction approach to book writing. And I gained a bunch of insights and I got a bunch of stories. But then when I had all this data, I said, I don't want to just give this to people and tell them this is what I did, this is what I found. I want to create something that I would want to read. I want to create something that people who don't like self-help would want to read. So I took all these insights and I imagined what it would look like as a story. This story of somebody who lives a cloud nine life, but you know, on one side, he lived the cloud nine life. On the other side, let's see what happens when he doesn't live the cloud nine life. So this was the imaginative piece. And then the creativity piece was about putting it together, right? How can I creatively make a story where I showed all the insights for Cloud Nine and also showed this juxtaposition between the life you could live versus the life that you did live? So that was creativity. And then the next piece is about the reader, interpretation and implementation. So like I mentioned to you guys before, I truly believe that the way that you get the most out of self-help or reading books or studying or whatever it is by interpreting for yourself in your own life. I think we're all truly very, very different. So I can't just tell, you know, Christian to do something and it's going to work the same way for Christian that it does for me, that it does for Andre, right? That it does for any of the listeners out there. So that's the interpretation part. I want people to read the fiction and say, oh, I resonate with this character. Oh, I don't like that character, so I don't want to do what he did in his life, right? And then you get to craft, you know, your own story. And then finally, implementation. It's actually, you know, after you interpret, you start living out that story that you crafted for yourself. So with those four components, the imagination and the creativity for me, and then the interpretation and the implementation for the audience or the reader, or the end user, whatever you want to call it. That's how I came to making this book.
That's awesome. And I'm super excited to actually read it because it's so different for the entrepreneur space. So just from an author's perspective, quick question is like, how did you translate from writing a nonfiction book to a fiction book? Because like, I'm trying to like picture myself doing it and I feel like I would fail miserably.
That's a great question. And so the way that I create anything is through consumption, just consume, consume, consume. So when I wrote my nonfiction book, I told you guys already, I read a lot of personal development books and I also listened to a lot of podcasts and I read a lot of articles. I tried to emulate some of the people who I enjoyed. And finally, I put my own spin on things by making that comfy routine, right? I did the exact same thing for The Journey to Cloud Nine. And I had just read the sequel, Yezo Mitch Albom.
I'm not familiar with him.
Okay. He wrote like Tuesdays with Maury, Five People Meet in Heaven. Yeah. So I had just read the sequel to The Five People You Meet in Heaven. It's called The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. So I actually read that book and I had the idea to make Cloud Nine into a heaven-like experience where you get to heaven and you get onto this cloud, the first cloud, and you get to relive an experience in your life and you get to live it in the best way possible. And then you go to cloud two, you relive another experience, And ultimately cloud nine is the way that you relive your entire life so that it's this experience that was ideal or optimal, right? But in thinking of that idea, I had some people tell me, mainly my dad, who was just saying like, you already have your first book of people who you're trying to help in real life, right? People who you're trying to raise their positivity, their spirits, their mental health. So why even flirt with the idea of making it seem like it's better on the other side? So immediately I said, okay, let's turn Cloud Nine into a heaven-like experience while you're here on Earth. So that's what the book really has developed into. And the other funny thing I did right before I started writing the book was I read a book called Dark Matter, because Dark Matter is it's basically a sci-fi book about like quantum theory and how there's multiple, outcomes at any given time and string theory and things like that. And that's kind of what Cloud Nine is. I'm saying there are sliding doors and you can live this life, but maybe you had an opportunity to live another life. So I read that book and I just really fell in love with the way that the author described things. So I took his ideas for imagery and things like that. I took Mitch Albom's ideas for overall concept and structure of the chapters. And I say take, not literally, because I just used them to formulate my own ideas and craft my own version, you know? So that's how I did it, was just by consuming other people.
Props to you. I couldn't even imagine myself doing it, but that's awesome. Yeah. Dude. And that's fun. Cool. I think it's like with anything, is you just have to like be in the game to actually understand how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you said, apply principles that stand out and that make sense to you in your own way. So that's awesome, dude. And I feel like that applies to really anything out there. So if you guys are working on something other than a book, then that same theory definitely applies to really anything you're doing. So I just want to touch a little bit on Cloud Nine. Yeah. So for people out there that might not know who you are, like, what's like a brief synopsis of what Cloud Nine is? Maybe go over some of the principles if you can.
Yeah, let's absolutely do it. So it's fun to start with a backstory here of how Cloud Nine came to be. And it was a pretty standard Sunday afternoon. It was almost a year ago now. It was late November. And I was at my buddy's house. I live in Manhattan and I live in Midtown and he's lower. East side. So we were watching football, cursing at the TV, slow roasting a pork shoulder. And next thing we know, we got news that, or we started talking about how an acquaintance of ours from high school had passed away. Right. And we started having deeper conversations and we were talking about life and love and fulfillment and purpose and meaning. Right. So it was a little bit different than the conversations we'd normally have. But after this, I took an Uber home and I'm driving on the East River in my Uber. And I'm usually the person who chats up the Uber driver. asks a ton of questions, tries to, you know, get them out of their normal routine of just sitting in the front and driving. But because of the conversations we had, I was feeling super introspective. And I was just thinking in the back seat, not talking. But that changed because I saw a boat in the East River, and the name of the boat was Cloud Nine. I thought, wow, that's a pretty cool name for a boat. So I just said to the Uber driver, hey man, like, you see that boat called Cloud Nine? He's like, yeah, of course. So I said, what does Cloud Nine mean to you? And his responses are still the most popular ones that I've seen, and they're the foundation for the chapters throughout Cloud Nine. So he started telling me about his wedding day, and he started telling me about the day he had children, and he started telling me about this uninterrupted moment of joy he had as a child, and he started telling me about something with his career, and he told me about something where he gave back to his home country, right, or wherever he was from. So as he's telling me these stories and saying, like, the key ingredient of these Cloud Nine experiences was that it was something that I wanted to do, and I didn't look to other people. I wasn't influenced by society or anything like that. I kind of said, like, okay, I think I have a concept here. So I started asking more and more people, my mom, my dad, my brother, my roommates, my friends, what does Cloud Nine mean to you? What does Cloud Nine mean to you? And I got similar stories, stories that had these themes that I uncovered, that had these momentous occasions throughout life that I uncovered. And that's how I started to craft each chapter. It's a theme and an event that occurs throughout our lives that allows you to feel like you're on Cloud Nine. And because he told me about the way in which his Cloud Nine life uncovered and choosing based on himself as opposed to anybody else, that's why in the book, each chapter is really split into two. And it shows you the protagonist's life as it was, and it shows you his life as it could have been. So that's what, you know, that's the message I'm trying to share. It's that I constantly want you guys to consider your life as it is and your life as it could be, right? That's what's most important. Yeah.
That's awesome. And just like a flashback, kind of, I was on your, like, Cloud Nine podcast, I guess. Yeah. You asked me my Cloud Nine moment, and I told you when Tiger Woods won the Masters.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I don't think that was a popular theme, but, you know, I always try to unpack each moment, right? And I think for that one, Andre, we ended up talking about how it was sort of achieving the unexpected, right? And the delayed gratification that goes into an accomplishment like that. So that's sort of like true calling. That's sort of like entrepreneurship, right? It's like when you really feel like you're on Cloud Nine, it's not when you get 5,000 Instagram posts. Like, maybe you got a quick glimpse, 5,000 Instagram likes. Maybe you get a quick glimpse of the Cloud Nine feeling, but it's more when you've put years and years of intentional effort behind something that ultimately comes to be this amazing feat, just like Tiger winning the Masters. So yeah, that's in there. That's in the book, something like that. So yeah, man, it was a funny moment, but there's power to it.
Yeah. So with that, I just wanted to flip the script and just ask you what your Cloud Nine moment would be. Cause I haven't heard you share it.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't have one that I go to for every story that I tell. I switch off. Like, sometimes I say that I had a Cloud Nine moment this morning. Sometimes I say that I have this grandiose Cloud Nine moment. One that comes to mind, though, is it's actually about someone else. A lot of the theme with me is that my Cloud Nine moments are being happy for other people. And it was this day in Chicago, after school had ended, my master's program, where I was at the gym, came back home. My buddy's sitting on the couch with my other roommate, and he just says, Gross. That's my last name. He goes, Gross. Like, I came out today. And I said, what, can I curse, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I didn't know the whole time, but I like to curse. So I just go, like, you came out, what the fuck are you talking about? And he looks at me, he's just like, dude, I'm gay. And I had known he was gay for as long as I knew him, right? But this was the moment after 5 years that he decided to come out of the closet. And it was just this euphoria where I dropped all my shit, my bags, my water bottle. I think I threw my phone on the floor. I just form tackled him onto the couch because it was similar to the Tiger Woods feeling. You know, I was just so proud, so happy for him. Like, it was delayed gratification, you know, like he had waited a long ass time to get to where he was in a state of comfort to share that with people. So I just couldn't have been more thrilled. And that always jumps out at me as a time where like I truly felt like I was on top of the world and it was for somebody else. Yeah.
That's incredible. I feel like a lot of people really, I mean, even for me as well, like it's just like normally some personal accomplishment that gets me to that kind of state. So for you to put somebody else in the forefront is great. But how has your mindset shifted? Do you think that writing this book has shifted your mindset away from being like maybe pessimistic sometimes and being down in the gutter to being constantly upbeat, or is that always how you've been?
Yeah. So I think about this all the time, guys, because my thing is about positivity and optimism and living, you know, according to fulfillment and contentment. But I'm probably one of the first people to tell you that you can't be like that all the time. You need to experience lows in order to make the highs higher. I think that's just how it works, right? So, you know, for example, one thing that I'm doing marketing wise is I'm trying to create worst case scenarios. And I don't think we do this enough. And it's actually a cool podcast episode that I just listened to on Lori Santos's The Happiness Lab. She talks to Michael Phelps's coach. She talks to an esteemed psychologist from NYU. And she talks to the first ever transgender Navy SEAL. And they have a conversation about a process called WOOP, which is wish, outcome, obstacle, and plan. And that obstacle is something that we always forget about, especially as optimists, especially as positive thinkers, who we don't want to think about the negative. We don't want to think about worst case scenario. But for me, it's important to plan for it, right? And the way that I went about what I want to do with Cloud Nine is, again, I was listening to another podcast where I heard Mitch Albom speak, my favorite author. And he said that when he first wrote Tuesdays with Maury, his goal was to pay for Maury's medical expenses. And that's all he wanted to do. That was his sole goal. So it was a worst case scenario where there was an unfortunate circumstance and he was writing this book to pay for his medical expenses. So for me, even as positive as I am, I need to create a situation where I am in a sense of urgency, right? Or in a state of scarcity. So I basically did what I did for the book, and I imagined a situation that would be traumatic for me and my family. And my mom has multiple sclerosis. So I said to myself, if her medicine was no longer available through her health insurance, what amount of money would I need to make in order to be able to pay for her medicine for the next year, right? So that's what I want to do with this book. And it gives me this external circumstance. It gives me something, you know, worst case scenario. And it really balances out the positive thinking and allows me to realize like shit does happen, you know, shit happens all the time. And, it's the way that we play with the cards that were dealt that matters most. So yeah, I hope that addresses your question a little bit.
Absolutely. I feel like it's not really about like the person's circumstances so much. Like a person that lives in a low income house doesn't really have much, could be way happier than someone who's making millions every year. Yeah. It just really depends on what you make of your situation, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That one of my favorite videos online is a bunch of like 2 to 4 year olds in Africa with just like minimal clothing, no shoes, just dancing their asses off, smiling as much as they possibly can. Yeah. And the message of that is just like, enjoy what you have, be grateful for what you have, right? Because, you know, it could all be taken away and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next. So just enjoy every single moment. Try to make those Cloud Nine moments too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I also feel like today's society makes it kind of hard to appreciate what you have because everyone's always like chasing the next thing, you know, trying to impress people on social media.
Yeah.
Whether it be with your friends or just people you don't even know. Like Gary Vee says a lot, like you're just trying to make money just to impress people that you don't even know, like with shit that you don't care about. Like that's
what
it's kind of hard for me because especially like when you're creating your own business, you know, you're always chasing the next milestone, like next revenue goal or things like that. So it's kind of hard to take a step back sometimes, but I really applaud what you're doing with the book because obviously it's going to help people kind of get a perspective on that and maybe, you know, reevaluate their current situation and realize, okay, what I have isn't that bad right now. So
That's the goal, man. Look, it's called The Journey to Cloud Nine for a reason. it's the old adage that it really is about the journey as opposed to the destination. You have to, you know, just enjoy everything you're doing with the people that you're doing it with.
Yeah, it's awesome. And the way you originally pitched the book to me was pretty cool. I remember you just saying like a lot of the self-help people and entrepreneurs out there are kind of like enforcing their theories and their preaches on people, which is kind of like a turnoff for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And self-help, like saying like you have to do this if you want to be successful and you have to have this mindset. So I think it's really cool that you're like pivoting away from that.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, how would you pitch your book to someone that has no interest in entrepreneurship? Maybe someone that's in medical school or a lawyer or someone that just, you know, looks down on self-help and entrepreneurship and says that it's phony or anything like, or along those lines.
Yeah. So, I mean, first and foremost, that's the reason why it's fiction, right? It's got this, I'm excited for you guys to read it, but it's got this movie-like feel to it where you don't even realize you're reading something about personal development because I go so deep into the character development and it's a very intense character study of the protagonist. And there's drama to it. There's love. There's all these components of a regular novel, right? So I did my research on that. So that's the first thing I'd say. It's that even if you're not interested in self-help, it's still a breezy, enjoyable 2 to 3 hour read where you can just escape from your day to day. The second thing I would say to immediately follow that is that when you're escaping from your day to day, there's also, it's almost impossible to not relate to the characters because in the hundreds of people I talk to, I put a little bit into each character, right? So you're gonna resonate with somebody in there on some level. So whoever you are, you know, I would say that there is a little bit of you within the book, and it's a great opportunity to just say, I want this guy's cloud nine life. I want this girl's real life, right? Because there's a lot of different characters throughout the real and the could have been life. And it's really valuable when you put yourself in their shoes and try to assess your own situation.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I guess my next question would be like, you talk about setting like crazy, tremendous and quantifiable goals.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a movie deal at the beginning of that question, or like this becoming a movie. Is that one of your goals? And if so, what are some other big goals along those lines?
Yeah. So that crazy quantifiable goals, like quantifiable is the key ingredient there. So just, you know, like movie deal, that wouldn't be one of my goals, right? Maybe that's a dream, but that's not one of my goals. So I think to preface, too often these days, kind of like we're talking about society and liking instant gratification, wanting to do more and more and more, I believe that's very true. And I also believe that we want to do more and more and more, but put in less and less and less, right? We're trying to do the least amount of work to maximize our return. And for me, I've always been somebody who I want to do the most amount of work within my capability, and I want a return that's within my control, right? So what I mean by that is I want to set a goal where there's a number of people who I can reach out to every single day, and it's within my control to pitch them the book and ultimately hopefully get them to buy it, right? That's way more within my control than, say, making an email campaign online using bots and sending it out to random people and hoping that it goes out to 10 million people through some sort of algorithm and just hoping that people get it and like it, right? To me, I need to be able to wrap my head around the concept of what I'm doing, right? So that's one of my big quantifiable goals is I want to reach out to 9,000 people before the book comes out. I want to have 9,000 one-on-one conversations where it is me talking to them, either on LinkedIn, on the phone, on Facebook, over text message, right? So that's one of my big ones. A couple months back, I did 90 podcasts in 90 days. And I broke that as a guest. And I broke that down into I'm going to reach out to 15 podcast hosts a day. And before that, I said I'm going to research 10 podcasts, right? So I always have goals that have a number to it. So I know what I'm looking for. So I don't stop early. I don't do too much. And I always set a date on my goals as well. So by book launch or by July 31st for the podcast. The more pressing or the more, you know, real it feels like there's a due date, you know, think back to school, the more, you know, you're going to put in the effort to get it done.
That's very interesting, because I feel like with school, if someone says like you have to do this assignment by Tuesday at 12, like you're going to get it done. But if you're working for yourself and you're like, I want to close the deal, but you don't have like a set date, you're just going to kind of not really go all in on it. So I really like that advice of like setting a hard date for trying to land something. And even if you don't, then you put in a lot of work and you became better from it, you know?
Exactly. And I'm a personal trainer too, guys. Like I wake up super early. I get to the gym, do my own workout at 5:00. And then I train people from 6 a.m. to like 8:30 a.m. And then I do everything else for the day. And when people come into the gym and they just say, I want to lose weight, right? Like that's the worst goal you could possibly set for yourself, right? Like, so what I try to do with these people is rather than saying that, the goal has to be, that's the dream, is to lose weight. The goal has to be, I want to come into the gym 3 days a week for 8 weeks straight. That's the goal, right? It's just a more definable outcome.
Yeah. So what I'm really getting from this is goals more being like actions rather than outcomes, because you could have a goal for like $1 million, but like you said, you're not in control of that. But if you map out a plan on how you think you could get to $1 million, maybe making, you know, 100 cold calls a day,
to people,
that's something within your control. And at the end of the day, if you don't hit the $1 million goal that you had or the $1 million dream, at least you know you did what you calculated would get you there. And from there, you can adjust, obviously, up or down, or reevaluate what else you need to be doing to get to that final number. So that's, I mean,
exactly,
really cool.
That's spot on.
Got it.
You could do it for everything, right? Like, I want 500 Amazon reviews by August 2020, right? Like, you guys, hopefully you get 500 podcast reviews by August 2020, right? And you can control that, because you can reach out to people, 100 people a day, saying, hey, take a listen to our podcast, right? We'd love a review. And then, you know, that's all within your control. But what I mentioned in the beginning is that it takes a maximum amount of effort, right? So I spend 3 to 4 hours a day on just messaging people on LinkedIn and having phone conversations, but it's because I know that there's going to be a return that I truly, you know, enjoy and can really take note of.
Okay. So one of the questions that comes up for me, I guess, is like jab, jab, right hook, right?
And,
you know, people get messaged all the time on LinkedIn, on Instagram, very salesy messages, right? And I'm not saying you do this at all. I'm just saying, from a perspective of people listening in the audience saying, okay, like if I want to get 500 podcast reviews, I don't like how can you craft a message, I guess? Cause you've done it really well, which is why I'm asking you, how do you craft a message to send to 100 people asking for something in a way where they feel like obligated or have like a good feeling of like, I should do this for them. Why not?
Yeah. So I'll give two stories here. I'll give the direct answer as to what I'm doing on LinkedIn, but then I'll also tell you guys how I got my TEDx talk, which could be helpful for anybody out there who wants to do that. So you always want to come from a place of authenticity, adding value. So I always personalize the message with the person's name, and then I send pretty much the same script based on the content that I've put out in the past. I start with a question. So I want to get insight from the person. So it's a multiple step process. I don't just say, hey, buy my book. That's not going to work, just like you said, Andre. So what I do first is I say, hey, I'm a content creator on LinkedIn. I see that you've liked some of my content. What could I be doing better? What do you enjoy? What do you not enjoy? I would love to have a personal conversation with you, make this platform feel more real, and ultimately, you know, use their insights to become better, right? So I send that message. Then after I get the responses, I respond back. And then there's a little bit of a dialogue. And then right after that, I say, hey, by the way, I'm also giving out free chapters of this new really big piece of content I have coming out called The Journey to Cloud Nine. It's going to be a book. Would you be interested in reading those sample chapters? So I give that away for free, email it over to them. And then after they have that, I have all the data for who these people are who have the free chapters, because I have their email. And then what I'll be doing next is when the pre-order page is up and running, I'll just be saying, hey, I hope you enjoyed the free chapters, and here is, you know, here's the full book. I would love for you to read the rest, and that's when it's outside of my control. I can't force anybody to read the book. I can just say how much value it brings other people, because I'm already getting that kind of feedback. Yeah, so that's the LinkedIn.
That's awesome. And would you kind of suggest that method for trying to sell anything via social media?
I really would. Especially social media, especially for content creators. I think first and foremost, using your fans as your greatest asset is one of the most important things you can do, like your pre-existing fans, because they'll be your mavens, right? They'll be the people who go out there and spread the word if they really love what you're doing. So one of the reasons why, and again, I'm always trying to think a little bit differently than everyone else. So try to follow me on this one, guys. When you think about like your favorite book, right? Who's your guys' favorite author?
Ooh,
or who's tough. Your guys' favorite entrepreneur or somebody who has a podcast or a book?
Gary V.
I would say my favorite author is Simon Sinek, but yeah. Entrepreneur, yeah, Gary V.
Okay, so think about Gary V and Simon Sinek, right? And you guys are fans of his. Fans, the goal of a fan, right? Like you want to meet the person who you're a fan of, or you want to have an email conversation with them in our case, or you want to collaborate on work with them in our case, right? And that fan base gets created by work that you put out there. And then the fan has this, you know, maybe cloud nine moment when they finally get in touch with you. So given that I don't have something out there right now, what I'm trying to do is sort of flip the script on fans, right? And I don't have the content out there yet, but I'm creating all of these fans who I'm already reaching out to, right? And then when the content comes out there, rather than people wanting to get in touch with me and have a conversation because they're my fans, they're already going to be my fans who have already had a conversation with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're like reverse engineering how like someone becomes a fan of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I'm basically telling them why they should be a fan, as opposed to waiting for them to make their own decision as to whether or not they're a fan.
That's interesting. Is it like cold outreach? Is it like warm in terms of like people are already engaging with your stuff, or is it just like, okay.
It's warm. Yeah. So I've been going through all of my content that I've put out since December of 2018 on LinkedIn. And I go to whoever liked it and I put them in a spreadsheet and I put the date that I contacted them and I put if they got something for free, I put if they responded, and then I put like their email in a spreadsheet. So I've got all these different spreadsheets for my outreach styles, like podcasts, free chapters, things like that.
That's interesting. Do you think, how would you utilize that in terms of trying to sell a service? Because like you're trying to sell a book, like a piece of your content. How would you recommend going about that if you're trying to sell like a service, say like marketing or consulting or something like that?
Yeah. So I did the same exact thing for coaching. I put people into a spreadsheet, people who liked my content. I would ask them what they enjoyed. And then I'd just get into a conversation where I'd ask them questions about their lives. And I think questions are what really drives the conversation, right? So being curious, being genuine, being authentic. And it does take a bit of time. You're not just going to get somebody to sign up for your service off of one crazy message. And sure, that does happen. But to do something more consistently, it does take a little bit of patience. But patience is so huge as an entrepreneur, somebody selling something.
Yeah. Yep. 100%. And I mean, you just from hearing you and knowing you as a person, like you're super organized, which I think is super important to do what you do at the scale that you do it at. Mm-hmm. And I feel like nowadays there's so many like misconceptions about entrepreneurship being like an overnight success, especially with marketing, like hacking your way to a certain number of followers or a certain number of sales or whatever it may be. So if you could kind of just add truth to like how it actually takes real work to get to somewhere you want to be. And I guess just talk about like what you've done so far. Like you mentioned 90 podcasts in 90 days. Like that's insane. We don't even do that. And we host a podcast. You don't even host a podcast. So if you can talk about like what does a day in Jordan Gross's life look like right now?
Yeah. So I've got, this is my handy dandy 20 item sheet And this is, I print this out every single morning, right? So I'll read it off for you guys. So I wake up at like five, a little bit before five, I go lift at the gym and then I do my personal training. There's a morning routine, some, a little bit of a morning routine somewhere in there, getting comfy. And then I do five LinkedIn comments every day because, just like I said, I consume before I create. So I read people's content and I create meaningful comments for them. Then after that, do my own posts on LinkedIn. After that, I edit two people's articles. So again, I'm trying to be a writer, obviously. So I want to improve my writing skills. I do editing for that. So I read other people's work and I get to improve on their work too. After that, I do my own writing. After that, I sit down and I do my 100 messages, reaching out to 100 people a day on LinkedIn. After that, this is all for the book. So I'm reaching out to two quote unquote influencers per day, someone with a bunch of following on email list or LinkedIn or Medium or podcasts like you guys. Then I reach out to two podcast hosts to hopefully get on their show. Then I reach out to one person because I do my own Cloud Nine interviews, which Andre, you and I did. And then I reach out to five people from the 90 podcasts in 90 days. I'm getting feedback from all those people. So I reach out to five of those podcast hosts, like for 18 days, that would be 90. Because what I want to do is sort of create my own podcast guesting rubric and say like, hey, I was a 4.6 in creativity and a 4.9 in like original content. So I can give that to any potential or future podcast hosts, whose show I want to be on. After that, I do reaching out to one endorser. Those emails usually take a little bit longer. Then I do five coaching conversations / pitches. Then I do my comments responses on LinkedIn. So whatever content I put on there, I make sure I respond to all the comments. Then I answer all the messages from the 100 messages of that day. Then I do phone calls. I do a little bit of TEDx research because I want to give a TED talk related to Cloud9. And then the last two things are, I always try to have a creative outlet, working on a side project or the next book or something like that. And then the 20th thing is fun. There has to be time for that interrupted play that I said leads to a Cloud9 moment.
Dude, how long does this take? How long does this whole thing
take? So, like I said, I wake up a little bit before 5 and I'm probably done with my day at like 8 p.m.
How do you?
And then the fun is after that. Like, and fun could be sitting on my couch and just vegging out, doing nothing.
How do you? Every single day, you're able to wake up and like, I'm gonna do this today. Like, it's gonna take me over 12 hours. I'm gonna do it. Like, how do you find that in yourself every single day?
Just knowing that this is for a much bigger purpose. And I'm sorry to be cliche here. I don't really have a different answer like I always like to have, but I know. Well, I'll say this. When I wrote Getting Comfy, it was my entryway into this personal development world. And I thought the concept was really good, but you know, the book is okay. I self-published. I didn't have a editor or anything like that. But with the journey to Cloud9, I know in my heart, like in my intuition, just like the Cloud9 version of the protagonist's life, I know based on me that this is something that can truly, truly, truly impact people's lives. So every single day, even though it's tedious, monotonous, and for a long-term gain, it takes a shit ton of patience. I know that what I'm doing, all this work, is going to be worth it in the end, not just for me, but for all these people.
That's so true. And that's like all awesome stuff. And I feel like this follow-up question is kind of stupid, but it's just something that I always think about. It's like, you're doing all these things and most of these things are technology based, which would most likely entail using like a phone. Have you ever had like problems of like headaches or migraines or just like feeling disconnected with the real world? Because I do a lot of the same things too. Like Christian can also attest to this, is you're spending a lot of time on your phone.
Yeah.
It's just like a tough thing to balance. And also other people like criticize you for like, you're always on your phone. It's like, but like I'm doing productive things. So like, how do you balance that?
Yeah.
In a healthy way, I guess.
Right. Pretty simple advice: walks, runs, human connection. walks, runs, human connection, right? So if I get headaches and I feel lethargic sometimes, when that does occur, I know I need to get outside. I need to get into nature. I need to take a walk, get some fresh air, right? So it's just like a regular work day, except it's my own break. You know, I can go take a walk around the corner, call my mom, call my buddies, whatever it is. So that's one thing. The other one is when it's nice out here in New York, like taking a run really clears my mind, gets me away from things. But then on the flip side of the walk or the run, which is something for me, making sure I have human connection every single day. So that's pretty easy for me. I live with three of my best friends since elementary school, so I see them every day. Or I'll hop on the phone. You know, I take calls from 4 to 6. So that's always nice human connection. Like, I consider this human connection. You know, you don't always need to be right in front of the person, although that is super helpful. So I make sure I do that sometimes, working in a coffee shop, asking the grocery person how their day is going, right? Just these little things that we so often forget when we're in our own world, like on our phones or watching the computer screen.
Absolutely. I just want to rewind quick to like the outreach aspects. Like, how do you find 100 people every single day to outreach to?
Yeah. So the available people are dwindling as of now, because I'm just going through all my content and choosing who liked my post. So I've reached out to 1,500 people already. We're here in the beginning of November, so I've been doing this for about 3 weeks. And I find them through my posts. So I'm going to have to figure out a new strategy for the next one. You know, and these are all people who I don't know so far. So obviously I'm going to go through my phone contacts and get a couple hundred people from there. I'm going to go to my Medium articles and get a couple hundred people from there. I'm going to go to Facebook, get a couple hundred people from there. And then bit by bit, it's just going to keep adding up and adding up and adding up. And for me, I've been deliberate about why I'm creating a network in which I care about the number of people I have. So on LinkedIn, I have like 18,000 connections. So I want to reach out to about half of them.
It's amazing. And I mean, I think you definitely inspired a lot of people out there to like do more, especially myself, to like start doing more with the time we have.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going to.
He does more, bro.
I'm going to try hard.
Yeah, no, you guys are doing a lot. So just keep it up. And for the listeners out there, you know, the thing that I'm trying to portray with Cloud9 is that you don't have to be the person who you listen to. You don't have to be the person whose content you consume. You need to be the best version of you who can use that person's principles in your own life.
Love that. Yeah, the last person we had on here too said it's 100% okay to be your true and authentic self. And I think,
yeah,
it's exactly right, like you said. So,
of course,
awesome. So we're gonna jump into the lightning round. We know you have obviously a pretty busy day. So, the first question of the lightning round is just if you have any questions for us before we move on, and if you don't, it's no problem.
Yeah. Personal questions, random questions,
like anything.
Future of you guys. You're sophomores at Binghamton right now. Okay, I've visited Binghamton a few times. What's your favorite off-campus restaurant?
Interesting. Probably Chipotle, but like I feel like that's a terrible answer.
Locally, definitely, I would go with Dos Rios. Their burritos are pretty fire.
Nice, nice. Okay, I haven't been there.
Interesting. Good question, though.
Nice. Yeah.
Awesome. So the first real question of the lightning round is if you could have dinner with any three people alive or dead, who would they be and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. Tough one for me. Again, like my answers always change to these things. I don't have go-tos. Right now I'm feeling my grandpa, both grandpas, so that's two. And then somebody who I've always just wanted to meet was since I was a little kid, Shaquille O'Neal. So my grandpa's just to say what up again and see how they're doing. And then Shaquille O'Neal, because he's been my childhood idol for a while. And I think that dinner would be pretty interesting.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, like sports.
You want to meet my grandpa's too?
I mean, like, no, I know what you mean in terms of, like, my grandmother passed away, and then, like, I love sports, so I'd want to hang out with, like, Michael Jordan or something like
that.
I know what you're saying. So the next one is, if you were in college right now and you wanted to start a side hustle, what would it be, and then how would you go about doing it?
Yeah, so I would either start a podcast or write a book. And what I would do is focus on getting as many insights and interviews as possible, because when you're a student, you have such a great opportunity to learn, and people are so open to giving knowledge to learners, especially students, that you can just do so much, just like you two are doing. So I would tell other people to take a page out of your guys' book and just get out there and really learn from other people. And just like I keep saying, interpret and implement into your own life.
I love that, because every time we've asked that question so far, like, the immediate answer is some way to make money.
Really?
We jumped into like the education aspect of things and how like it's an information age and whatnot. And I think that's really important. And I mean, obviously with a book and a podcast, there are ways to make money, but obviously the focus going in is the information and the education. So it's awesome.
There's a quick aside on money. It's like, we didn't talk too much about it, but for me, I always think that we should be making money based off of extraordinary things rather than ordinary things. So rather than like making money for doing chores, right? I think we should make money for helping the world, right? People don't associate helping the world with making money, but that's what I think there needs to be a little bit of a flip narrative there.
Love that. Yep. 100% agree on that. And obviously a lot of people don't feel the same way, but that's a good answer. So the last question of the lightning round is, what's one thing you know today that you wish you knew when you were 19?
One thing I know today that I wish I knew when I was 19. This comes full circle, because it goes back to my story when I was 19. I wish I knew that the advice I received, that I didn't need to know what I wanted to do after college. I wish that I didn't take it so literally. And I just said, okay, I don't need to know what I need to do. And I wasn't even exploring what I could or should be doing, right? So I just wish that I had a little bit more intentionality behind my college experience at age 19. I wish that I, just like you guys, learned outside the classroom, took on side projects, filled my time with things that were going to benefit me and the people around me, as opposed to just focusing on schoolwork and partying and having fun. So that's a biggie for me.
Still all about balance. So I mean,
and still doing that too. Exactly. Like, yeah. And still doing that too. I still do it here in the city. You know, weekends are still mine.
Absolutely.
Certain days of the year are still mine. So it is exactly all about balance.
Love that. Well,
yeah,
that's about everything we have. You crushed it. I mean, that was awesome.
Thanks,
thank you for hopping on. We'll be sure to stay tuned for your book and all the free chapters and stuff that you're dropping. You keep in contact with us for sure. But just for our audience, could you just like plug your social medias, whether it be LinkedIn or anything?
Yeah. So I'm Jordan Gross on LinkedIn. I am journeytocloud9.com. There's info on the book, coaching, every TED talk I've done. We actually didn't talk about that, but TED talk I've done, other podcasts I've been on. So journeytocloud9.com. And then on the book page, you can go snag the free chapters, but I'll also provide you guys with the link to share, for the audience. So yeah, that's it, guys. And I'm so, so, so grateful and appreciative that we had this conversation. I loved all the questions. I loved the flow and the way that things turned out. So thank you for giving me the opportunity. And I hope it was helpful for not only the audience, but also you two as well. And feel free to be in touch with me about anything. I'm always happy to chat. And that goes for everyone too. You can email, my email's all over the internet. I think my phone number is too. So just reach out. I love talking to people, obviously.
Sweet, man. Of course. We always, you know, the interviews aren't just for the audience, it's for us as well. So thanks for giving us some value, and go crush the rest of your day. We'll keep in touch, man.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Jordan, let us know if you need anything, man.
Yeah.
Will do.
Take care.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.